But is it on for Cigar Federation too?
We're on Cigar Federation, yeah.
Okay, good.
And we're live. What Embargo? Book 2, Chapter 5. And we are spending an evening with a good friend of mine, Jose Blanco. And it's a bold endeavor for Jose to be a manufacturer to come on a show and you know, talk about Cubans. But then again, if you know Jose, you know he smokes anything and everything. And he appreciates all good cigars, no matter where they're from.
That's right.
Which means that there's some bad Cubans, and I'll agree with him on that one, just as there are some bad Nicaraguans. But, Jose, what are you smoking right now? Why don't we tell the audience what you're...
To be honest, you know, it's... first of all, it's good evening, everybody, great to be on the show, What Embargo, and of course, anything that has to do with Cigar Federation. Everybody knows I'm a big fan of any cigar that's good. I smoke 4 or 5 cigars a day. It's different. I can't smoke the same cigar back to back unless I'm working on something in the factory. It'll be the first cigar of the day if it's a blend I'm working, and then it'll be the first cigar in the afternoon if I have to smoke 2 cigars in the day. But actually, I do 4 to 5. It's different. It doesn't matter. Dominican cigars, some Cuban, some cigars from Nicaragua, once in a while something from Honduras. But I'm very open-minded and always looking forward to just talk about cigars. And, you know, even though I have to say this, Cuban cigar lovers, I think, are the most hardcore defenders of Cuban cigars in the world. And like I've said that, of course, Cuba makes great cigars, and I think that one day when this mess is all fixed up, we will even see much better cigars. It's right now it's like a catch-22 situation.
It's, you know, I'll agree with you. I'll tell you one thing, because, you know, I love Cubans. I do a show on it, and yeah, I find myself defending Cubans quite a bit. June, I'm sure you do as well. Yes, nay.
Yeah, I mean, I personally enjoy cigars that got a good balance of everything. I feel like Cubans have that. I feel like non-Cuban stuff has, but when I smoked cigars back in, what, like 6, 7 years ago, you know, Nicaraguan cigars didn't taste the same as it did now, in my opinion. Or it was just the market dictated that it's just a lot of powerful, spicy stuff, which... It's just powerful and spicy just for the heck of it. I'm not a fan of those cigars. But when I switched over and smoked some for the first time, I really got a good sense of, you know, balance and complexity and depth. And just, you know, that's what I enjoy about it overall. I think that, I mean, non-Cubans make crap cigars, great cigars. So does Cubans, right? So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, anyone who smoked a Quai d'Orsay knows that it's a crap cigar.
Oh, please.
Which one?
Quai d'Orsay?
I don't like them. I don't know why.
So, but,
Jose,
know,
Go
ahead. No, you go ahead.
No, I first wanted to kind of spend the session and picking Jose's brain on, you know, his love for cigars and just specifically talking about Cuban cigars. So, Jose, what do you think about just kind of, you know, I know that you've been smoking for way longer than I have, certainly most people out there. So how do you feel about, you know, people talk about Cuban cigars tasting different back in the day versus now. What are your thoughts on how Cuban cigars were smoking back in the day and how current production is like?
Look, this is, you know, you have a lot of people talking about Cuban cigars, and unfortunately, in the United States and many parts of the world, people smoke a lot of fake cigars. And, you know, when I'm at an event and somebody comes up and tells me, well, you know, I just got this box of Monty 2s for $275. What do you think of it? First thing I tell them, well, you got screwed because they cost like $450, $475 in Cuba. So you have a lot of people out there that are selling fake cigars, and I think that's one of the biggest things we're going to face when the embargo is lifted. But that aside, you know, you got to go back in time. You know, I started smoking Cuban cigars probably I've been smoking for 48 years, so that was probably when I was 22, 23, once in a while. And then when I was, I would say 24, 25, maybe a little bit more, I started, people would travel to Cuba, bring me cigars. I got some cigars from some people living here that had good contacts and would get them. And to be honest, you know, the consistency, the draw, you could pick up the aging of the tobacco was totally different. Now, what people don't know is that Cuba had, when we started with the boom, that the boom was 93 on, Cuba, I think, was 1992, was hit for the first time with blue mold. Then I think it got hit with flooding in 93, and I think it got hit with blue mold in 94. So what happens, 4 or 5 years of inventory, all of a sudden, got swept away, plus the demand because of the boom. You got to remember, like in 19, I think it was 98 or 99 to 2000, Habanos had a production, tried to do a production of over 200 million cigars a year, but we all know that a lot of those cigars went back. You would look like a box of Monte Fours, and you could see 13 across. You would see brown. You would see almost greenish. You would see, like, you couldn't match two wrappers together in those times, 2002, 1999, 2001. And then they realized they had to bring down production. Also, you have to understand that while in Dominican Republic, Nicaragua, Honduras, we have all this technology and we have all this equipment to work the land. Like, you still go to Cuba and you still see oxes, like a lot of places in San Juan y Martinez and Vuelta Arriba y Vuelta Abajo, still with that. While I think very rarely in this country you'll see an ox, you'll see tractors, and you'll see all these modern things. But that, putting that aside, you have to look at cigars, I would say, before 1995 and then after that. Now, they've had some good years, and I think in the last 2 or 3 years, their limited editions and some of their regionals have gotten much better, in my personal opinion. Now, their regular production, still, there's a lot of inconsistency on it, hard draw, cigars that you know the tobacco, it needs time. You know, tobacco's from, you hear people, especially, I'll give you an example, England. The English are the greatest defenders of Cuban tobacco in the world. I don't think there's any country in the world. But we all has a lot to do with business. So when somebody in England, and I have a lot of good friends in England, especially one of my best friends is Mitchell Orch, and he's one of the biggest retailers of Cuban tobaccos in the world, they tell me, well, Cuba makes the best cigars. And I tell them, look, it's that's not true. Is a Cuban cigar good? It's as good as a cigar is going to get, but it's different. It doesn't mean it's better. It's just a different profile from Dominican Republic, from Honduras, from Nicaragua, from Costa Rica, from Mexico. It's like when I laugh when people tell me that the two tobaccos that are more similar is Cuba and Nicaragua. And then I tell people who say that, then you have never, ever smoked a real Cuban cigar. Because the creaminess of Cuban tobacco could only be compared with the creaminess of Piloto Cubano and Corojo 98 and some Corojos that are grown there. If you take pure grade tobaccos from Cuba, Dominican Republic, and Nicaragua, Nicaragua doesn't have any similarities. But that doesn't mean the tobaccos from Nicaragua are, I'm not saying they're bad, they're good, because many of my blends that I've done during years have tobacco from Nicaragua. My señoría has tobacco from Nicaragua. Emma uses tobacco from Nicaragua. Hochi, my cousin, used tobacco from Nicaragua. So it's just this mindset that people have about it, and it's totally different. Cuba and Dominican Republic are more similar than Cuba and Nicaragua.
Yeah, Nicaragua is where
nothing
like Cuban tobacco. I love the tobacco, but it's nothing like Cuban tobacco. I think Honduran tobacco from like Hamastron and even, as you said, you know, Piloto Cubano from the DR are much more in line with Cuban tobacco. So I'd agree with you on that one.
I have another question. I'm just going to kind of throw out questions of, because I feel like part of what's great about what you do is you know tobacco really well. A lot of people view you as that guy that knows tobacco. So I've been within the, what, like last 8, 9 years of smoking or so, you know, I have questions that just never made any sense to me while I smoke it. Like, for instance, like, you know, the majority of us know that overall Cuban cigars are better aged. Right? Like, that's a blanket statement a lot of people say. Can you talk about that and your experience of, you know, why that is as compared to, like, non-Cuban market? Usually, you know, when it comes out, it's ready to smoke and it's delicious.
Well, the first thing you have to understand is that while Dominican Republic and many other companies, the majority of companies in Dominican Republic have inventory of 3, 4, 5 years, there's some companies here that have tobaccos that are 10, 12, even 20 years old.
Yeah.
Nicaragua, have two or three companies that really age your tobaccos also. But the problem in Cuba is that Cuba only has three sources of income. It's tobacco, sugar, and tourism. So while we're aging tobacco 3, 4, 5 years in Cuba, and I don't care what they say, their regular production, that tobacco is not more than a year, year and a half. Now, on the Ediciones Limitadas, I firmly believe there are some tobaccos that are 2 or 3 years old. But to come out to tell me there's tobacco they're using it for 10 years, it's not true. Because what people don't realize, the problem with Cuba is not filler and it's not binder. The problem with Cuba is they have a lack of wrapper. Right now, the last year, Cuba can only make 90 million cigars. And their production is going to be less and less and less. Why? They lost 5,000 curing barns, I think it was like 3 or 4 years ago, that the government had to make a decision. What do? Do we make curing barns or do we help put roofs on? You know, the people in the countryside are that. So they have to develop that, put roofs, repair houses, make curing barns. You know, I've said this a million times, and I'm going to say it again tonight. We will see the greatness of Cuban tobaccos again, not when the embargo is lifted. That will not change anything. Democracy has to come back. Castro and the regime has to leave. Has to come in, and it will take a minimum of 6 to 7 years before things get in Cuba the way they were before. Yeah. Maybe more.
It's interesting because when you talk about filler and binder, and I'll admit it, is there's a La Casa del Habano in, I think, the Netherlands or something, or Germany. I can't remember. June knows. That was making a custom for them.
Oh yeah,
it's a blend of Nicaraguan and Cuban tobacco, and you know, June and I asked the question, I wonder what the wrapper is, and we wanted, you know, we preferred a wrapper that was from Cuba. But do you think that just Cuban tobacco, and I've smoked Cuban tobacco and blends, do you think it does better with a wrapper that is not from Cuba? And the reason for that is just because the better quality wrapper that we can get out of the DR or Ecuador or Nicaragua, etc.
Listen, you know, there's a lot of people. I don't have to defend Cuba because I don't get anything out of it. But every time that I hear people saying that tobacco's from back in the old days, it was the Cuba was getting tobacco from us, and it was now the last 3 or 4 years. People saying that, you know, they're getting wrappers from Ecuador and tobaccos from Nicaragua. And then I tell them, if you have been smoking Cuban cigars and you have smoked non-Cuban cigars, and let's say 30% or 25% of the filler in that cigar is Nicaragua, the cigar will taste totally different. And you and I have had this conversation because I told you that when I used to go to Cuba, Robaina would always give me 300 or 400 leaves of wrapper, and I would bring it to La Aurora and I would fool around with it. And my good friend Trey Samet in Canada, one time I went there, it was like maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and he had about 8 or 10 pounds of Cuban Ligero of filler there, and he had, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 pounds of binder. I'm not doing anything with this. The Cubans left it here. I have it in perfect condition. And I brought it back. And, you know, once in a while, people will take, they will go to Cuba, would, you know, I would tell them who to go to, and I would always get 2 or 3 pounds of tobacco. So I've made blends. with Cuban wrappers, a Dominican binder, 30% Cuban, 25% Nicaragua, some nice Corojo and Piloto Cubano cigars. And I've given them to people that really, really smoke, and there's a person that doesn't work with Cigar Aficionado anymore, James Suckling, that even wrote a blog about it. And at a show in Vegas, I think it was like 2007, 2008, they do a pre-show, a pre-dinner, and I arrived early, and James said, "Do you have anything to smoke?" And I gave him this Corona cigar that I'd been playing with. And right away, 4 or 5 months into it, he says, "This is not totally Cuban. This is really good, and it has some Cuban tobacco with it." Then I explained to him, but I told him, "Look, if you're going to write about it, just don't mention that it was me who did it." And he wrote a nice blog, and he wrote that it was very interesting. I think tobaccos from Nicaragua, especially Nicaragua, Dominican, and Cuba, they marinate very, very well. But to go out, like a lot of people have said, that the Cubans are using tobaccos from other countries. Look, I've been in many factories there. And, I mean, when I went there the first time, I was allowed to go everywhere. And I can tell you, I did not see a leaf of tobacco not from Cuba.
Yeah. I mean, you always hear those things. And it's you know, I'm like you, it's... I would love to be able to have that opportunity one day to work with Cuban tobacco, and you know, some Aganorsa and some you know, some of Christian's Corojo from Honduras and some DR tobacco. I just think it'd be a lot of fun. You know, Ecuadorian tobacco as well. It's just, that'd be pretty sweet in my opinion.
Well, if you look at it, you know, people ask me all the time, what country do you think that's producing the best wrappers in the world right now? In my opinion, it's to me, I think it's Ecuador by far. I mean, yeah. You have Habano, you have Tunata, you have the Connecticut. Some people are growing Piloto Cubano, some people are growing Criollo 98. I mean, the land, the soil, everything in Ecuador, I mean, it's like God just, or Mother Nature just said, like, you guys are going to be like the next generation, or the big, the not the generation, but the next big tobacco producing country for wrappers. The wrappers from Ecuador are amazing. It's not only the Perez family, the Oliva family. You have Fermin, is a Dominican that's been working a lot. You have also the Perez family, which are the biggest growers of Connecticut wrapper in the world. You have also the people from La Aurora with Fermin. They're growing tobacco there. The guy from Roberto Duran, he has a friend of mine that was here this week, Tomas Cabrera, he's a very famous agronomist from Cuba working there. You have the Cubans that own Vitola's Bar, Gustavo and his brother, they're growing tobacco there with our good friend Freddy. So, you know, there's a lot. Damian Bouchoff out of the French guy who has the big tobacco warehouses here in Zona Franca. He grew last year, I think it was 850,000 pounds of wrapper. So it's
wow.
Ecuador, I mean, it's just amazing, the tobacco that's coming out of there.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Ecuador and Sumatra. I love when it's a really
good. And Habano, too.
Yeah. I'm still waiting for you to do an Ecuador and Sumatra release.
We're working on some things.
I know. June.
Oh, I know what to ask you. So Seth and I had, I'm not sure if you had the cigar, Jose, but we had the Bolivar limited edition from, was that 2014? They called it the Super Corona, right?
Yeah.
Him and I talked about this. I don't know if you guys had this discussion already, but we smoked that when the cigar first came out, and we thought they were pretty good cigars. So we smoked that 4 or 5 months later, and man, it tasted like, to me, it tasted like dirty ashtray. it was not good. What happened? Why does that happen?
Look, to be honest, in my experience with this, it should have tasted much better.
Yeah.
My opinion. Look, look, it's a hand-rolled product. You can never know. I'm going to give you an example of something that happened to me. I can't remember if it was 2009 or 2010. Could have been maybe 2010. Monte Cristo and Mundo came out.
Okay.
And in 2010.
Maybe it was the Petit Mundo. I can't remember. Either way,
but,
I know
but before Petit Mundo, the bigger Mundo came out. Well,
yeah.
A friend from Havana sent me a box, and I opened up the box. I smoked the cigar, and it was terrible. But that's no. To be honest, I've told this story a million times. I put it away for a year. Not a year and 2 days, not 360 days, exactly a year. The year was completed on a Sunday morning. So I had it in my phone, smoke El Mundo. So it was early Sunday morning, maybe 7:30 in the morning.
I love that you have an alert. I'm going to interrupt you here. I love that you have an alert on your phone. To smoke the Monte Cristo El Mundo. That's just incredible.
Right? No, I didn't know because I was curious. So what happened? I go to my humidor. I took out the cigar. I cut it. Thank God it had a good draw. And it was like smoking two totally different cigars.
Yeah.
That year of aging brought out the creaminess. It brought out the flavors. It brought out all the richness that that cigar had. So a year did a ton. And then, you know, a year later, 2 years later, I think I might still have two or three of them left. They were good. And at time. And to be honest, June, I don't know why, because my experience with Cubans has always been that after a year, 2 years, 3 years, I mean, they just get much.
Yeah, and I feel like that doesn't happen in the non-Cuban cigars I've had, right? Like non-Cuban cigars, when I first get them, I mean, probably 99% of them are smokable and they're good. And as age goes on, you know, I lose out on things like strength, right? Which makes sense. The nicotine kind of goes away after a couple years or a few years or whatnot. But I've never had, I guess, what you call a Cuban cigar is a sick period. Some people call them. Yeah.
So. The sick period, you have to understand, the sick period is when the cigar, see, there's a lot of confusion over that. The sick period is really after the cigar is made, those 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 days after that, they're going into the sick period. That's why when you make a cigar, or you smoke it right off the table, or you just let it rest for 21 days. Now, this that happened with Cuban cigars, sometimes it's tobacco that maybe on regular production doesn't have a year, and it needs that extra aging on it to get better. That's what happens with the majority of Cuban cigars on regular production.
Yeah.
The
tobacco is too young.
It's young. That's the truth. And, you know, these people that defend it. Look, the first thing I tell people, you buy a box of Cubans, if you can read the codes and you see it's a cigar that's from this year, smoke one, make notes out of it, put it away for a year. And also, I always tell people who travel abroad, especially in Spain, France, that try to go after the ones that don't. People go after Cohiba, Monte Cristo, Romeo. Go after Sancho Panza, Trinidad, sometimes H. Upman, and try to see those boxes that have been sitting there that are there from 12, from 11, from 13, and you're going to see that those cigars are ready to smoke right away. They already have 2 or 3 years of aging on them.
Yeah, that's a nice thing when you buy Puro Larrañagas. You can usually get a box with a lot of age on it. And it's because it's, you know, I bought a box of a Bolivar Petit Coronas probably in 2009 that were pretty young. And they were rough. They were really not good. But, man, they're smoking amazing now. The Petit Coronas are just fantastic, and it's something that needs age, but it's just, you're right, it's just that young tobacco, which, you know, I mean, you age your cigars 180 days after rolling, and then they ship out.
Oh.
But it's, you know, you pick those up, and they're great, but, I mean, the 65s are still smoking. I like actually how the 65s are now. They're a little bit softer.
Well, those, you know, the tobacco on that, the average on that is more or less 6 years. The wrapper is actually seven. Some of the fillers are 5 years. But I'll give you an example of a, and this is something you probably see on Instagram. Every time I see somebody smoking a Trinidad, whether I know them or not, I always put a like and this comment on it. That's one of the most underrated Cuban cigars there is.
I love Trinidad.
It's phenomenal cigar. It doesn't have the name as Cohiba or Monty or H. Upman or Monte Cristo. But I've had so much good luck, especially with Trinidad, Coloniales, and I think Fundadores.
Yeah.
That cigar is phenomenal. I think you and I talked that on my trip to China, I met this very wealthy guy, and he gave me original Cohiba Siglo VI. He gave me St. Louis Ray from, I think, five from 2001. He also gave me, and I found with my friend Edward Wong, a shop where actually the guy knew who I was. He was flattered that I was. It was like a little shithole in Hong Kong. And a great price on Trinidad. It was like it's not a Lancero. It's a Trinidad. I would say it's like maybe a 6.5 by maybe 42. I might have a couple of left. That's
about the Fundador, the Fundadores.
I don't know what it was, to be honest, but it was like a 6.5 maybe by 42 or 40. Wow. It's not, but it was a limited edition 2007.
Oh, the limited.
It's on my Instagram somewhere. That cigar is one of the best cigars that I've had. Now, I know this question is going to pop up. What is the best cigar that I smoked in the last 10 years, Cuban, or maybe 15? Partagas de Reserva, the one that had the black and silver band on it. That is probably one of my most memorable smokes of all times.
When did you smoke that, roughly?
Oh, shit. I smoked that maybe 5 or 6 years ago.
Okay. So when did those came out? Those came out, oh, man.
I think like 2004 or 2005, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, that might be even later. Yeah.
Nice.
I don't know, man. You can't beat Jose Piedra.
Then the other most memorable Cuban smoke I've had, I was visiting my friend Trey Samet, that we had been friends for years, and he had been in Dominican Republic. So when I went to Canada for the first time on business, the year 2000, and I remember it was April or May, and I told Trey, because at that time I was working with La Aurora, that I was going to visit. He says, I have something special for you. So at that time, you could smoke in the shops, and he had a nice lounge downstairs, and he went into this room he has. Everything is like sealed with all the alarms in the world, and he's a big collector. So he said he brought out a box of Romeo and Julieta, Petit Bellicoso, 1990.
Oh, wow.
I've never, ever nubbed the cigar the way I nubbed that cigar.
Wow.
It was what I call a memorable smoke. But it was 1990. I had 10 years on it.
Yeah, that's a good amount of time. Now, speaking of memorable Cubans, we're going to go instead of positive, negative. Should Habanos and Cuba Tobacco just stop making the Cohiba Maduro 5s? I mean, why is it that, I mean, I have my theories, but, you know, you have, and I'm going to use Cinderella Maduro, the Matilde Oscura. I know that's Mexican San Andreas, but those are two fantastic Maduro offerings. It really captures what I think Maduros are all about. But Cuba just can't seem to get it. They just keep failing miserably on this.
Listen, I have still maybe three or four original, because they were given to me. Actually, that's when they started packing them in 2006. I remember it was Mágico, Secreto, and Genios, I think, were the three ones they made. And I remember that Deborah Garcia at Partagas, they were sorting them for the first shipment, and the first thing she asked me, what do you think the American consumer is going to think about that? And I said, it's great that you guys are coming out with it, because unfortunately in the many parts of the world, if a wrapper is not very, very dark, people don't think it's Maduro, because in the mind of people, people think that Maduro, the color, is what determines whether it's Maduro or not. It's not true. So I remember I smoked them there. I didn't like them. And then somebody gave me, I can't remember who it was, a box of the 2008 or 2009 festival, and it had a Coiba Maduro in it. And it was horrible. Yeah. And then during, as years gone by, people have given them to me, and people bring presents, and I still can't smoke that cigar. I don't know what it is. It's very unbalanced. It's not earthy. It's muddy. And it just leaves me with that I just don't like. I just don't like that Coiba Maduro. It doesn't do it. Well, to be honest, it's not my cup of tea. There's people that rave about it, but it's not my cup of tea.
Yeah, well, those people are wrong. So
I feel like the only way I've only heard of people talking about the Coiba Maduro in a good light is when it's, you know, guys that smoke strictly Cuban cigars, and they turn to something like the Coiba Maduro as a way to break up their routine, so-called, which I don't agree with. I mean, first of all, if you only smoke Cuban cigars, you're really missing out on cigars in general.
You're missing the boat.
Yeah, you're missing a lot of stuff.
So those are typically the older school guys where, you know, they're like, oh, I've been smoking for 50 years, Cuba's where it's at, blah, 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 but... Yeah, but other than that, nobody buys them. That's why you still see those Maduros. You know, there's still original release boxes out there at a fair price. So
can't get rid of them.
I know. Right. You know, I love to talk. It doesn't matter what part of the world I'm in. If I'm in Sweden, in France, in Spain, in Mexico, Argentina, China, Thailand, I love to talk cigars. But if somebody, the conversation is only going to be about Cuban, it's going to be a very short conversation. Because I like people to be open-minded. Yeah. And for me, a guy, I love pizza and steak, but I can't have it every day. So my definition of that is they're very good, but they're not better. They're just totally different because the taste profile of Cuban cigars is totally different from DR, from Nicaragua, from Mexico, from Ecuador, from Costa Rica, from Honduras, from Peru. It's just a totally different profile. Now, you have tobaccos like a Piloto Cubano grown here, like what Hochi and Lito do, that you smoke the cigar and you will pick up what I consider Cubanesque notes. And that used to happen a lot also with the original Camacho Corojo. And I always told Christian that it has Cubanesque notes. Now, people ask me all the time, what tastes like a Cuban? You know what my response is? Another Cuban.
Good response.
it's so true because I couldn't, I mean, I love a lot of cigars from all over the place, but I couldn't just smoke Cubans. I think that's what makes it great is that, you know, the ability to, you know, I'm going to smoke a Davidoff, and then, you know, I can smoke something from Aganorsa, and then something from Cuba, and then something, you know, one of yours, a Tabacalera Palma, one of the Blancos releases, and it's just, there's a nice variety. Everything's a little bit different. It's just fun. It's entertaining. You're getting new experiences and something different all the time. I mean, I've been a little disappointed with a lot of recent Nicaraguan stuff besides Aganorsa. I think Aganorsa stuff's good, but the stuff coming out of the DR right now, I'm just really... really a fan of. I think there's a lot of creativity on the island.
Speaking of just kind of different tobaccos and whatnot, Jose, within the cigars that you blend, that you ultimately come out with in production, what is the inspiration behind that? Is it you try to make what the market is dictating? You try to, you know, make stuff that you could smoke the rest of your life? I just want to personally know.
No, listen, I've had this conversation many times with on many programs that I've been on. You have to look at the trend sometimes, maybe in sizes, because, you know, M and I are very traditional. And the first thing, I never tried to make anything, not even close to anything that's in the market, and especially I will never do anything like anything I've done previous years in La Aurora or that I did at Joya de Nicaragua. Because those things are already made, you have to be very creative. So what do you look at? You look at different tobaccos. You look at the amount of tobaccos that you have. You look at the aging of the tobacco that you have. You look at the profile of what you want to make. It's like when we were working on Senorita, the people we had on the panel, the first thing we would ask them, because there were people that already have been smoking and knew of my career for many years, is it similar to anything we've made or that I've made? And they said, absolutely not. And with the Señorial Maduro, it was, you know, we just didn't want to, like, what a lot of people do is they have a blend that's been good, and what they do is they just slap a wrapper on it. We don't do those things, you know. We worked on it. We had the basics on it to make it. I'll give you an example also with Freya. That was something that Emma did on her own. She worked, you know, I didn't have to do anything with it. Hochi, my cousin, didn't have to do. She had her idea. She went to the production manager. She said, I want a Mexican binder. I want this wrapper. I want these fillers and all that. And she worked her blend. And then we were the panel for her, which, by the way, it's doing very great. It's a great cigar. It's a lot of flavor. It's very unique, has a great concept, and she's worked very hard on it. But it's like when I go to the show, and I always bring back 150, 200 samples that people give me, and probably a lot of the people that start off, well, they come up to me, oh, Mr. Blanco, we know that you smoke everything. Could you smoke these cigars, and when you have time, let me know what you think about it. And I ask them, well, what are you looking for? Well, this cigar tastes like so-and-so cigars and so-and-so. I don't say anything to them, but in my mind, I would say, well, why are you telling me you're making a cigar to compete with this guy, with that guy, when already these guys are successful, and you want to sell a $14 cigar where these people have already been successful with a $10 cigar? So I don't say anything to them, but through my mind, I go like, what are they thinking? So to answer your question, we will never, ever, Emma and I, make anything that's similar to anything that's in the market or that I've made before, because that's not being creative.
Yeah. Yeah, I was. That's interesting you say that, because one of my favorite cigars, I think this is when you were back at La Aurora, I had this like 100 Anos. I think it was like a little petite. I think it was a petite Lancero that somebody gifted me.
How many years ago?
Oh, this is a long time ago.
That's the original one. That cigar is phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, afterwards I smoked that. I talked to my buddy. It was actually Dustin. And I said, I need a half more. And he said, sorry, buddy, that's long ago. I was like, so. No. Jose, well, think Cuba. So, like, within market trends. So Cuba, they produce a lot of regionals and the Reserva line, Limitada line, and the Grand Reserva line. Do you see that kind of parlaying over to the non-Cuban field and working well on that? Because I see some of that. I mean, I know, like, for instance, like John Huber does store exclusive. Pete Johnson definitely does store exclusives. Do you see that kind of trend continuing and selling hot over here?
It's doing well. The thing with the limited, there's a whole bunch of people that are totally against it. First of all, because they don't get it. It's hard for you to find a cigar you really like and not be able to smoke it again. But it's a limited edition, so if you really like it, you know, maybe, because it's like a catch-22, because, you know, okay, I don't have the money, I can only buy two, I wish I could buy two boxes. So, you know, the guys that really have the money, they'll go and buy two or three boxes and have it. For the regular guy, yeah, maybe he can spend $100, maybe he can go and buy 10 cigars and that's it. So sometimes it's a financial situation, but I'll give you an example. 20,000 cigars for the 65th anniversary, and I think we have maybe 100-something boxes left in the office. We don't even push it anymore. What we're not going to do is, like, 3 years later come up and say, well, we still have 65th anniversary time deal. Maybe it'll run through the first quarter of next year, but when it's gone, because that's it. I mean, we've left something for our other markets in Asia and also in Sweden and in Russia and in Macedonia, Greece, and things like that. But it's not like 3 or 4 years later, you know, we're going to come up with it like some people have done. No, no, when it's done, it's done. The cigars were made and just sitting there. We don't have the even if, let's say, it would be the cigar of the year this year, and we would need 100,000 cigars, we couldn't make it because it was a limited edition. It was limited to 21,000 cigars because it was a small, especially the wrapper. We didn't have more tobacco to make it. So I'm not going to, after putting a 7-year-old wrapper, come up and put something on a 3-year-old wrapper. It could be very similar, but it's not going to be the same. So I'm not going to put my name and my reputation down the line because I want to make a couple of dollars.
Great cigar. I love that stick.
That 60-bit.
Oh yeah.
Did you smoke it? June, did you smoke it?
No, not yet. I actually knew about you within that 100 annals. So when I smoked that 100 annals that you had taken back in the day, that's how I knew about you. And just like I smoked everything else that you made. I haven't had a Maduro Señor Real yet, I will. So I'll do it by make little B&M trips.
I'll get you taken care of. I'll send you some stuff.
Oh, cool. Thanks. Seth, just out of curiosity, what is your favorite? When we were talking about like the best cigar we had within the last whatever few years, what's yours? I actually smoked mine like literally a month ago.
You know, it's funny. The first time I smoked that Edmundo Dantes 109, that's I'll never forget that experience. But I just smoked a 2008 regional. I smoked it again. It was just fantastic. Was a Ramon Iones for the Belgium region.
And the Benelux regional one.
Yeah, 2008. It was like a Robusto Extra. And it was so flavorful. Really good Ramon Iones. It's just, I mean, it's gone, but it's one of those, I really like that. That's pretty darn memorable. I mean, I love H. Upman Sir Winston's, and you know, it's which would bring on our next conversation. But what's your favorite Cuban in a while, June?
So I was skeptical about Cuban custom rolls in general. But at my local B&M about 4 years ago, I gave this guy literally like bags of cigars because I just had so much of it, and he was complaining about Poker Buddies that always want to take his Davidoffs and whatever he wants to covet. So as a result, when he came the next day, he gave me this really fat cigar, and he told me that that was actually a Alejandro Robina farm roll. It's a big cigar. It's got like closed foot and everything, and it's got a real nice hearty wrapper, which I rarely see out of Cuba, not certainly back in those days. And he said it was a 2002. I smoked that. Oh my gosh. I think I burned that so much that I burned my fingers and I wasn't cognizant of it and I kept smoking it. It was awesome. But then again, can't get them.
I know. You know what Seth and I talked about? I think I'm going to have two left. Is the Monte Cristo that was made for La Casa de la Mano in Mexico, the 109.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That cigar to me it was a memorable smoke too.
That's
I don't think there's many of those around anymore.
No. Yeah, there. I mean, if they are around, you're paying a lot of premium bucks on it. So
when I think of Cuba, and I compare it with other countries, double Coronas and Churchills really come to mind. And there's not many non-Cuban manufacturers that take on the double Corona. And I don't think a lot of them take on the Churchill. Jose, why wouldn't people take it? Because, I mean, you smoke. I think Cuba makes great double Coronas, and maybe I just think they make great double Coronas because not many other people take it on. You know, you never made a double Corona.
Well, you're talking about a double Corona 7.5x50, right?
Yeah, 7.5x49, 7.5x50, yeah.
Yeah, because you know, in the States, you know, Churchill's a whole bunch of things, but under Cuban standard, a Churchill is really 7 by 47.
Yeah.
There's people who do it by 48, by 49. I've even seen Churchill's people say 7 by 52.
Yeah, which is huge.
Wow, well, it's, you know how it is. We've made up so many different names and sizes and things like that, which I think it's interesting. But I haven't seen for years, I would say probably, especially in the U.S. market in the last 10 years, I don't think there's many really double Coronas out there.
Yeah. People just don't take it on. Why is that?
Yeah.
I remember La Rosa have a double Corona.
And I remember
we didn't sell a lot of it. Huh?
It was a Cameroon, wasn't it?
Yep, Cameroon, double Corona.
I like that.
But I know, but it's never a big seller. But then you see people in the States smoking a 7x80.
Yeah, that's a petite Corona, isn't it?
What I've seen in the last year, maybe a year and a couple of months, even though the big cigars are still selling a lot, but I've seen a lot of people that have gone, I see their posts, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, at the events when I visit, going down a bit. I was at an event at, it was in Alabama, and I had been there the year before, and we sold about 30 or 35 boxes at an event. And these two guys, I remember, were the first two that arrived at the event. And that was when we were doing our first year of Señoría. And the first two boxes I signed for them was two boxes of 6x60, which I was very happy. But this year they came and each box, and they bought 6x54. And I said, wow, I remember you guys. What happened? I said, well, you know, after the smell, we still like our big cigars, but we're more now into Robustos and Corona Gordas. So, and we do like the Señoría line. So what we did is just, you know, we took a little bit off it and we're buying a couple of boxes of the Toro Bravo 6x54. But we see ourselves in the future going down more to 52s, 54, 46s, and even some Lanceros.
Yeah. But, you know, and the other, another, a smaller size that I'm going to kind of credit you kind of bringing back was the Lonsdale. And I think you brought it when you did this, the CYB Lonsdale Extra.
Uh-huh.
And then you're doing it again with Señor Maduro. And I love the Lonsdale offering. And that's another Vitola offering that's not really big in the States.
I know. I remember that a couple of people said, why are you going to come out with that? That's a size that doesn't sell. That says, well, you know what? If we go by the sizes we're going to sell, you know, we're just going to be doing what everybody's doing. And you know, the funny thing is, when Em and I looked at our numbers last year, the Corona Gorda for Señoría was the one that sold the most. And so far for the Señoría Maduro Natural, the one that has sold the most has been the Lonsdale.
Lonsdale is
6.5x44, but I have to be honest on that. That's not a size that sells a lot. What happens is that we have a lot of people that follow us on social media, and the majority of people that are on social media are like Cigar Geek, and they're more towards Coronas, Petit Coronas, Lanceros, Robustos, and they're not really into those big sizes. So take like the Corona Gorda, you take like the Corona Larga that M is made for Freya. That cigar is selling phenomenal. It's not a size that you're going to see all the time, but it has a big following. It's like the pyramid. I mean, we're surprised. And overall, I mean, the pyramid. But Freya, all the sizes, the Toro, I mean, the Robusto, I mean, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, they're all traditional sizes. They're great. Freya's a... Have you smoked that one, June?
No, I got such a backlog without that idea to smoke, dude, because I've been, I don't smoke as much as I like to because of this new job, but.
Where do you work?
Oh, I'm in, so I live in Northern California in the Bay Area, and I live in, I work in the Bay Area. So I work in Oakland, and I'm a corporate finance guy, and It's a lot of desk number stuff.
He's got a good plant though. He's got a good plant there with him.
Yeah, but and that's a whole other thing. Being in California, it sucks to be a cigar lover. Like everything is against us. So, it is what it is. Yeah.
Seth, you gotta hook up June with some Freyas for him to try.
Oh, I know, yeah. I got him some Freyas in the Maduro, the Lonsdale. I love that smoke. That's a really good smoke. That's a good Maduro offering, June. Smoke that.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
I'm gonna bring up a country that's not big as a let's say big consumer of cigars is Sweden, and we have a great distributor there, Carl Martin. He has in 3 years revolutionized tobacco sales in Sweden, and he has really what we call kicked ass. And one of the things that we've noticed, especially with Freya, which is in a country where a lot of people smoke majority of Cuban cigars, how the impact of Freya has been even more than Señorial and Señorial Maduro. And what a lot of Swedes say is it has that Cuban-esque taste to it, notes to it. And the Swedish people that are very, very picky, we have been surprised how the bloggers there and all these people that are on social media have identified so much with it.
It's that Viking theme too, man.
The Viking theme. No, that was a good idea. That
oh, yeah. Let's not get those Vikings up and going. They're going to start raiding and pillaging our villages again. That was, you know, June, the original idea for the Freya release was for me to walk around the IPCPR trade show dressed as a Viking.
Seriously?
Carrying a
battle. I don't think you make the height requirement, dude. Are you a tall dude?
Yeah, I'm like 6'4", man. I make the height requirement.
Are you? You're 6'4"?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. I didn't know that.
I can make the Viking requirement. I'm growing the beard for it, too.
Oh.
You just wait. Is that Emma in the background?
I didn't hear.
Tell Emma we said hello. I hear.
Yeah, Emma, they say hello. They hear you.
Where are you, Jose? Are you in the States right now, or are you in Central America?
Dominican Republic.
Oh, nice.
Jose is an international man of mystery. He's always someplace.
Nice. I see your Instagram pictures of all these really scenic, like natural, lush areas and all that. Is that Dominican Republic where you're at?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
I could do that too. I just need to take photos in front of my computer screen. That's what I'm going to start doing. Pictures in front of the pyramids and everything.
Yeah. What are you smoking, Beth?
I'm just finishing this Gigantes where the wrapper was cracked and broken and, you know, just top quality construction. No, I dropped it, so I was like, oh, might as well smoke it. But it smoked nice.
Yeah.
So even though the bands are a little too fancy, I think Cuba's got to continue making, like, the new Por La Naga band. They got to keep making those crappy old bands. That's what makes the quality, I think, with some of their...
So flashy now.
Their lower brands.
Talking about... it was the... what was it? Was it the Monte Cristo Maduro that came out now?
Oh, the Partagas Maduro? Yeah.
Maduro. How was that?
Better than Cohiba Maduro, but it's really one of those... I don't know. I don't get why they would do it. It's... Yeah, I mean, you have the Partagas brand, then you make this Partagas Maduro. I don't get it. I think it's stupid. I think they should just kind of stick to what they're doing or what they were doing. So they just don't do Maduros. Cuba can't do Maduros. You know, some people just can't do stuff like that.
It's, at least I haven't smoked yet. I've heard mixed reviews on it. Some people like it, some people... Did you smoke it, June?
Which one? The Partagas Maduro? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah.
No, I don't want to. I have no incentive to buy that thing. I mean, if there's any indication of the Cohiba one, no thanks. I'll allocate money to something else. So, I'm very, like, when I realized that, you know what I've been really digging is the Agonorsa stuff. Like, I really dig how rich and flavorful that stuff is for the non-Cuban stuff. And with Cuban stuff, it's just, you know, I'll smoke it. I'll just kind of, sometimes I just close my eyes and I just go pick something. So, I wish I had more of those 100 Anos, Jose. You let me know if you have more somewhere stashed in the basement. Nice.
I don't know, maybe 6 or 7 left.
Nice.
The Corona size. I smoked my last Bellicoso about maybe 6 months ago, the one that got the big 93 rating on it.
That was back in 04, wasn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, that's the yeah. I have some of those 04 Bellicosos.
You have some of
They're not going anywhere. I'm not smoking them.
You know, it's funny. The great thing about that is, you know, some cigars, they tend to lose strength and flavor with time, even though it's lost a little bit of strength on them. But that creaminess, that flavor, the balance, that nice spice, they're all great smoke. I mean, it's still there. It's a cigar that ages very well. There's cigars, some cigars that age well and some cigars that don't age well, but that cigar ages very, very, very well.
Do you have presence, do you have presence in Asia, Jose, for your cigars?
We're working on that. We've been working on that. I've been going to Hong Kong and in Shanghai a lot. I have a, but it's not as easy because, you know, you hear a lot of people say, well, we sell in China well. Only actually two companies that sell legal in there that it's severely Davidoff and the Cubans. Then what happens is that a lot of stuff goes through Macau, Singapore, Hong Kong, things like that. And sometimes the monopoly just looks the other way depending who has it. But it's hard to get in there.
Yeah, because I was going to say a lot of the Asian countries are starting to really have a newfound appreciation for cigars. You know, with the money that they just been getting recently, you know, you just wake up, you're like, oh, I have an oil well in my backyard and get all that money from the government. I mean, they spend. And one of the things that I met, because my brother-in-law and my sister, they're in Hong Kong. So when I went to see his friends, they're all asking me about cigars and, you know, how to get this and how to get that, and which is kind of interesting because I'm over here going, wait a minute. Why are you asking me about Cuban cigars? You're in a country where you can get them out of the U.S. So
it's not easy. But I did see a lot of different brands, especially in Hong Kong. The Sheraton has a very nice lounge. I would say maybe you could sit down probably 40, 45 people.
Oh wow!
They had Davidoff there. They had Oliva. They had Padron. They had Fuente. I saw 3 or 4 or 5 non-Cuban brands there.
Hmm. Nice.
Going places. Well, that was our hour. That's What Embargo. Jose, thank you for being our guest.
No, it's always a pleasure to be with two young, talented brothers of the leaf and open-minded, because what I like more is to talk with people that are open-minded and get different reactions and different feedback of what they like, they don't like. And it's like I said, you know, the best cigar in the world is the one that you enjoy the most, and a free one. That said,
free one.
People always love a free cigar. And the thing is that you have to be open-minded. You have to smoke different cigars, different sizes, different profiles. Even if you love one country, you have to smoke different countries because the profile from that country is going to be more or less similar on everything. So if you really want to develop your palate and really open up to new experiences, you have to really smoke different things.
Yeah.
Agreed. Sure. Or else you're missing out. Guys that smoked, like just Nick Robbins cigars, what, 4 or 5 years ago? Nika is nothing like that nowadays, in my opinion. So you're really missing out if you don't smoke the whole gamut of stuff.
Got to get around.
Yep. Anyways.
Well, thank you, everyone. Everyone have a good Monday evening and the rest of your week. And a wonderful Thanksgiving. We'll see y'all December.
Yes. I hope to be invited again to the program. What an embargo.
Oh, you're always invited. Just tell us if you ever want to pop on in and give us some crap. That's what it's all about. Thanks, Jose.
Okay.